Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm very excited to introduce you to members of the creative team for the play Can't Feel at Home, written by Dr. John T. Glick and directed by Stanley W. Schwartz. This play centers on families displaced from the Blue Ridge Mountains in the 1930s to allow for the construction of Shenandoah National Park and the Skyline Drive. Today, we'll get a more in-depth look behind the scenes of this project and hear the story behind this play and its journey to fruition that makes its debut at Court Square Theater this December. We have with us J.P. Gola, Managing Director of Court Square Theater. Dr. Bob Wolf and Joe Appleton are the co-producers of this production, and Stan Schwartz, the director who has retired after a long and illustrious career as the drama teacher and producer of amazing shows at Harrisonburg High School. The play will be performed live at Court Square Theater in Harrisonburg, December 1st through the 4th. Welcome to the show, everyone. It's great to have you on today.
It's great to be here. Hi, Dawn.
Hello, JP, Joe, Bobby. And who am I forgetting? I can't forget you, Stan. How can I do that? Beautiful. You all, I read the play and was so moved by experiencing a full gamut of emotions of this human experience we all share. This one's of great loss and a deep attachment to our roots that make up who we are and what we become. At times, I was elated, amused, frustrated, hopeful, sad, resisting, accepting, and more. I felt I was right in the center of the homes of these mountain people and fell in love with the characters that tell the story. And in the end, I honestly had to take a moment and say out loud, bravo, Dr. John T. Glick. Bravo. Very well done. Very well done indeed. This is really an amazing play, and I am so thankful and grateful for each and every one of you creative team members to make this become a reality so that we can help get the story out. I can imagine there's quite a story behind this, so we're going to get into that today. All right. I want to start with you, Joe and Bobby, as the co-producers on this project. This is very personal to both of you and for good reason. And so I want you to share with the laughers what your relationship is with each of you together and with the playwright, Dr. John Glick, and how you came together to collaborate on this project.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dawn, for having us today. John and Joe and I are all members of the class in 1970 at Harrisonburg High School, so we've known each other all our lives, just about. John and I had a routine where we would go to the gym three times a week and then go to the coffee shop. And then one day he presented me with a gray notebook, and he said, "See what you can do with this." So I took it home. I took it downstairs. It sat for a few days, and I decided, well, I better look at it because I'm going to see him pretty soon. And I leafed through it. And I thought, you know what? It looks pretty good. But what do I know? So I read the whole thing again. I had my wife read it. I handed it out to several people that I know and trust, and they all liked it. I also soon realized that I didn't know anything about producing a play. So I thought, Joe Appleton. Joe was the star of all our plays in high school. So I said to John, I said, "John, how about Joe?" And he stood up. "Oh, yeah. Joe's a good one." So I contacted Joe. We met several times. Joe read the play. He loved it. And he's really been the producer. I just sort of got everything here.
So when Bob gave me the play, I read it and I went back to him and I said, "It's great. Yes, we can do it. It's too long. And we can work on that." And fortunately, we got Stan, and Stan has done a wonderful job of adapting what John wrote so that it is a workable length. And we took off from there. The luckiest thing that happened to me was to get Stan as our director.
That is really great. I'm still back at, you were in a lot of the plays at Harrisonburg High School. So what were some of the roles that you played?
Oh, Lord.
This is going to be good.
In Oklahoma, I played Will Parker. And in Carousel, I played Mr. Snow. And in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, I played Finch. And in all three of those shows, John was the character playing, you know, I wasn't the protagonist in the first two, but he was my antagonist. And then in How to Succeed, he is definitely the antagonist to my role. So John and I knew each other well stage-wise.
I see. Okay. And the fact that he had confidence in you after all of that says a lot.
He didn't learn his lesson.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. Well, some of our laughers actually may not really know what theatrical producers do for a play exactly. So I thought it'd be really wonderful if the two of you could share what your tasks and responsibilities are on the creative team to help a play of this magnitude come together.
Sure. So Bobby said that he's not really, but he has, he is sort of the business producer and I'm sort of the theatrical producer. And he got the venue. He has worked with businesses in the area. He's still working with them on advertising for our program and working with other members of our class on working on advertising for our program. And then I'm doing what are the more theatrical things. First of all, as I said, I found a director through asking around and saying, because I grew up here, but I've lived in North Carolina for 40 years and I'm back recently and I don't know folks. So I just started asking around and networking and saying who's, and everyone said Stan Swartz. And so I got in touch with somebody who knew Stan, and they got me in touch with Stan. Then also things like setting up the auditions, making sure they ran smoothly. I come to rehearsals to try to help out and to, you know, we're working in a space that's needs to be secure. And so it's just, it can be really little things like sitting at the front door waiting for people to come in and making sure that they're safe when they leave. But I'm also working on getting props and, you know, so the work of a co-producer is different in every show.
He's busy, Don.
He's busy.
I'm busy.
He is. And I do see John just about every other day. And I'm giving him updates on how things. Yeah. And he's really proud of everybody.
I was just going to ask, how's he feeling about the progress of the play?
He's really thrilled. And I read him scenes from the play. And we, like you and like everybody who reads it, it's a very emotional play because that's what John dealt with his whole life. He was a very emotional kind of guy. So he knew how to write it.
Yeah, it's really good. It does have some element of humor throughout it also, which I really appreciated. Of course.
Imagine that.
Imagine. Would y'all imagine that? Yeah, I really appreciated all of that. I'm excited for him to be able to see this in December. That would be really beautiful for that to happen. So tell us the story, how you ended up at Court Square Theater then as the home for this play's debut. I guess we should go to JP on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, months back, John, Bobby, and Joe met with me and they needed a home for a play called Can't Feel at Home, which is interesting. So they found a home in us. You know, I sat down and we talked about what we could do in our space and how we can kind of help the production come to life on the home aspect of our theater, and the rest is history. We've really had a great experience, and we're looking for several sold out shows and some amazing stuff in December. And I've been here all along the journey to kind of help out in any way we can from the Court Square Theater side of things. So yeah, that's how it happened.
When we were meeting with JP, he said a really great thing. He was talking about how Court Square Theater and the Arts Council of the Valley would like to be a part of this. And he said, it's just what we need. It's history, it's local, and it's written by a local celebrity.
That's right. That's right.
Very well said, JP Gola.
Oh, I'm gonna pat my, you can't see me, but I'm gonna pat myself on the back.
The back's over there, JP.
That's amazing. Well, Stan, you are retired, so I'm very curious what inspired you to take on this project as a director.
Well, when I first met with Joe, I was very quickly impressed with him. I asked for the script so I could read the script before I agreed to do it. I also very quickly realized what a community effort this was becoming. And that excited me in and of itself. Once I read the script, I was delighted with it. You know, John managed to capture so many great aspects of the mountain life, and he created such memorable characters, and it was charming and funny and sad, and it was just a phenomenal piece. And I was thrilled to become part of the whole production.
That's really beautiful. There's some amazing scenes in there. There's several I can speak on. There's a scene where Zeta, the grandmother, is passing, and she tells her story that no one really knew, as an incredible piece. And then the ending is just, well, they're just going to have to see it. I'm not going to say anything else about that. They're just going to have to see it. You have to experience that part. The characters are really colorful and vibrant. I would love to have you all share some of the kinds of characters the Laffers will meet when they come see the play.
One of the amazing things about directing is the variety of characters. And we have people in the cast from 8 years old to 79 years old. And the people that John created, it's been wonderful to find people to fit into those and to bring them out. So we've got comical characters, and we've got characters that are kind of dealing with very hard problems. It's great.
Yeah. Did anybody else want to speak on characters that kind of stood out to them?
My character is Luther. A little hot-headed.
Yeah.
Once in a while. Reminds me of somebody I used to know.
Is that you? Or may not be you.
May not be.
I think it's beautiful just because, you know, the script really tells the story amongst people of all ages, and it focuses a lot on the children and being in a schoolhouse and how they are dealing with the issues that they're dealing with the story, and it really gives insight on what little kids are dealing with and what they're going through and how they talk about it and discuss it. So it's quite beautiful. One of my favorite scenes deals with the looking for honey, for bee honey. It's quite beautiful, and you'll see it when you come and see the show. You'll see it, but it's a beautiful scene. Yeah.
Sure.
So that scene is also one of my favorites, JP. And my favorite character is probably his name is Fate, and he has grown up on the mountain pretty much by himself. He's not feral, but he lives in the woods, and he has a special connection with the children. And for those of you who were familiar with Glick and Phillips, that role is being played by Dr. Steve Phillips, and we are very excited to have him in that role.
Oh, that's really incredible. Yeah, you have found these characters because, or actors, I should say, to do the characters, because you had auditions last month. How did that go? And are rehearsals underway?
Yeah, it's been a steady progress, like it always is. And, yeah, we've got a good turnout and we're just plugging away at rehearsals.
Yeah, this one is a little bit different, too. Well, I mean, not... There are musical plays, and you've directed several of those, Stan. But this is, I'm sorry?
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have indeed. This one, there's Appalachian music. Is that what they call it? Bluegrass? There's an element of that. Can you speak on that process of auditioning, finding people that are able to play that music?
It was in this area. It was not terribly hard to find people who do that. The music in the show is different, as you mentioned, from a normal musical. It's more a play with music. There were some elements of the original script, which were almost documentary in style. You know, this is what was happening and this is what things sounded like and along those lines. So it was, when we adapted the script, that was one of the things, unfortunately, that we had to do was cut out some of the music because the music that John chose is so memorable.
Yes. And speaking of the music, it's just occurring to me, I didn't have this prepared in my questions, but I think we need to talk about this. The name of the play is actually a name of a song, right?
That's correct. Yep. The end of the show... we have the characters singing the old hymn, "I Can't Feel at Home in This World Anymore," which is extremely apropos to their situation when they're losing their homes and they're becoming aliens, so to speak, in places that are not theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that struck out to me the most is a scene between the Virginia governor and in the president's office, and the number I didn't realize of families this affected was 1,000 families. Is, I mean, I'd heard some of the stories from people that live here, and this story is not completely foreign to me, but it was the first time that I realized the magnitude of the families affected, just, you know, reading the play and reading that number.
And it was also, those families came from 8 different counties in Virginia.
Yeah, the park took land from 8 counties on either side of the Blue Ridge. And those were the people who were displaced. And people, like you say, 1,000 families, who would have thought that many people lived up there on the mountains?
Yeah, go ahead.
Some of the land holdings were massive land holdings, you know, hundreds of acres. And some of the land holdings had been in existence from before the Revolutionary War, before there was an official state and all that. And to have those gone, where you'd had generations of people living on their land for that long and then just saying you're out, was, you know, devastating.
Yeah, I can't imagine. JP, were you I know you're aware of the stories. Were you aware of the magnitude, or did that surprise you too when you were reading this?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, I knew the magnitude of it, but it really became surreal for me when Chaz Haywood from the city contacted me, and I actually went up to the courthouse and saw the original documents. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it was really, really powerful, because the original documents of how everything was, you know, written up. And it was just at that point in time, you know, you're always looking at and listening to a story and reading a story and seeing it play out. But when you actually go up to the courthouse, and I was upstairs in the vault area, and I saw all the documents, it was really powerful. And that's kind of more of how it really affected me. I'm not originally from this area. My wife is, but I'm a come here. And And but yeah, so I that's really kind of when it impacted me on that scale. Yeah.
How did it feel when you read it? To me, like the thought and sense that came to me is it would feel cold. Is that how it felt, or how did it feel to you? You're the one who actually saw it. You said it's powerful. How did it feel?
To me, I mean, I read it and I read it a couple times, and there were a couple of adaptations of it, but it was, I mean, I think I broke down probably like 3 or 4 times during the read through. We had a read through here on our stage, and almost every role was filled, and actually hearing it and kind of seeing it in my mind as an artist in my mind, I'm like, wow, just, it was really powerful. And when you see it and you come and see it, it's going to be an experience that needs to be told. Very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Joe. I can see you saying something.
Well, I JP has used the word powerful several times, and I keep telling people I'm talking to about, my friends, my family, that is the word that I hear the most from people who have read the script or were at the read through or have seen what's actually there, is that's the word that I hear over and over and over again, is that it is a powerful piece of work.
Yeah, it's definitely powerful. That's why I was speaking, the cold part feeling is just seeing those documents of here, your land is gone like that. Yeah. I know you've had it in your family for 200 years, but too bad, so sad. That has to feel cold, you know, almost heartless in a way.
Yeah.
You know? Such a complex life, is so complex, and what happens historically in our own lives is very complex, and that speaks to that in this play very much so. So what has the rehearsal process been then like for you, Stan?
Well, it's been exactly like any theatrical production, where you just start building the scenes and building the characters and building the interaction. A play script is not written to be read. It's written to be performed. So there's all kinds of things that you don't get in the reading that you do get when you see it being performed. And all kinds of things that I, as the director and the actors, it's our job to make it all come to life and add in the body language and add in the voice tones and add in all the human interactions that make the characters really live on stage.
Yeah. And how often are you guys meeting for rehearsals right now? And then will it amp up closer to when the production runs?
Yes, that's a normal process. So yes, we're meeting currently for approximately 2.5 hours to 3 hours, three nights a week.
That's really great. I'm so excited for this. For the characters portraying the mountain people, what is being emphasized, and have there been any special considerations that you need or wanted to make for this project to tell their story?
Well, one of the things that attracted me to the play in the first place was that Dr. Glick seemed to be able to find kind of a middle ground where people of either side or opinion about what happened will be able to see and accept the play. And one of the things that I'm trying to bring into it is just the people's sincerity and their realness, their believability.
One of the first things that Stan and I talked about the first time that we met with the script was that we don't want stereotypes. That there are lots of negative stereotypes. And as you heard in the second podcast, some of those were created deliberately by the government in order to make excuses for bringing people off the mountains, and that we don't want, people, gap teeth people with blacking out their teeth so that they look like hillbilly stereotypes that we've seen on television. And then also working with folks on their accents, because a lot of the people are local and have the accent pretty much already. And so, we have a couple of people and they started out and they were kind of doing Gone with the Wind. And,
and that probably would have happened to me.
work a little bit on that and pronunciation, specific names of the folks so that we get that right. But yeah, a large percentage of the cast have the accent that we need when they walk in the door.
Yeah. Part of the process in rehearsal, again, is getting them used to the vocabulary, because John also included a lot of specific details within the play that are completely accurate. So we need to explain to the actors, especially the children, what this means or what this is and why it's significant.
So do you have an accent coach per se, or is there someone that's working with them directly with that to kind of, how are they hearing to understand if they've got it right or not?
I have sent out some YouTube videos to the cast to help with that. And if we get into problems that aren't being resolved, we'll bring somebody in. But at this point, we're getting close enough that I'm satisfied.
That's great. Yeah, this is a beautiful play, a beautiful piece, a different time period, a specific culture. So who is in charge of the costumes and the scenic design?
The costumes are being created or pulled together, or a little bit of both. The head costume person is Elizabeth Powell Whistler, who we were extremely fortunate to bring into the process. She is the costume professor at James Madison University.
And that's wonderful.
She's also on the Arts Council board. And so through that connection, she volunteered. She also brings to it, she's a Native American background. So she, her forefathers have experienced some of the same displacement that the story is about. So she had a real personal connection there as well.
I like that. I like that you mentioned that. I love that whole relationship and dynamic. And I love that you mentioned that they talk about that in the play, too, having this identity of this might be how, you know, the Indian culture had felt when they were being removed from their land. And that's comes through the play a few times in a few different scenes. So I think that's very special. She's a part of this project. I had no idea. This is why we're doing this podcast, Laughers. This is real behind the scenes going on right now. This is good stuff. So let's talk about the scenic design. How is that all coming together? What will Laughers see on stage that puts us in this world?
Well, we are going for a very minimalistic style. They'll have to use their imagination, but we go through so many locations that we can't be realistic like a movie is. We have to embrace the theatricality and the things you can do on stage that work just fine on stage that would never remotely work in a movie. And the imagination is amazing, and what it does and what people, so many things that we would think were very important if we were creating a movie become not important at all on the stage because we're focused on the characters and what the story that they're going through.
Yeah. I think before we've talked about this, Joe, is the chimney a focal point in the stage design?
Yes, it is. And the chimney from the poster has the chimney, and then the organization that we've worked with at the beginning, the Blue Ridge Heritage Project, and their chimney monuments in 7 of the 8 counties. So, yes, that just seemed like a natural focus.
Great. Go ahead, Stan.
We do have the chimney is in every scene in the play.
Oh, that's really great. Yeah. And then in terms of scenic design, how does the creative members of Can't Feel at Home work with JP at the theater to make that all happen? What does that process look like, JP?
Really, it's I mean, it's really in the concept of when rehearsals are going through. So Stan and the scenic designer will tell where the cost of where the pieces are of the set, and then they would create a space based off of that. So we really don't deal on the theater side until they're loading in, and then they'll start with their tech and all that kind of stuff, and they'll really start to kind of to grow even more of an experience with that set itself. So for me, I'm not really involved in the set designing of it. Stan has come in and taken photos, and he obviously has a mapping of what our space looks like so that he can do his blocking with keeping in mind the set pieces themselves. But until load-in happens and they're starting to go into tech and they're starting to run, they really don't get to experience much on our space until then. Everything is really in the rehearsal hall.
Right,
Stan?
That's correct.
Yeah. And then for those who may never have been in a play and, you know, just been a viewer and not necessarily an actor or behind the scenes, what does a tech run look like? And when does it get loaded? When do the actors get to get on the set design that will actually be in the production and practice with that leading up to the play?
Yeah, we do a lot of temporary stand-in things along the way. But normally it's approximately a week before the show opens. And, again, we emphasize the characters, and the set pieces that we have are just there to help tell the story.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that often actors are spending several weeks with just the stage and not really maybe some of the props, but not the whole thing that an audience experiences when they come and have bought their tickets to see the play. Yeah. So I love that you shared that. Thank you. For each of you and the roles that you play on the creative team to make this happen, what have been some of the biggest challenges for you on this project, and how did each of you overcome it? We'll start with you, Joe.
So challenges at the beginning, we looked around at a lot of places, and Bobby can probably say more about this, and a lot of possibilities, and just there's so much out there. And so one of the challenges was figuring out what was the right thing to do. Our original production dates were September, which now when I think about it, I both laugh and cringe. We could possibly have pulled that off, yeah. Because we could not have. So I'm very glad that we didn't try. And
we'd have pulled it off.
Bob, just for the lappers, all know who that was. That was Bob. Okay, go ahead.
And then just the normal challenges of working with a lot of people, and people who are prone to be on time and people who are prone to be late, and just all of those things. Because I'm now that we've got things going, I'm just sort of the troubleshooter and trying to keep things moving along.
Okay. How about you? Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I'm trying to promote the play every chance I get. There's another organization, and you interviewed her the first week, Children of Shenandoah, and she is doing the marketing in the other counties. And I think we can see from the ticket sales that they're not all from Rockingham County.
So that's great.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a good showing all the way around. And if we would encourage people listening to go ahead and get tickets while they're still available.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. He's doing great. You're doing great promoting, by the way, Bobby. That was great. How about you, Stan?
Well, with any collaborative process, there are always bound to be communication issues that crop up, and getting past those. And the advantage of a collaboration is you have each other to lean on, and you have each other to spread the workload out. So it's not that much different than what you would expect in any kind of situation. It's just a little bit more intense because you've got a strict timeline. But people in the business world would recognize that too, deadlines.
Yes. So
it's a lot of it's pretty normal to a lot of other people's lives.
Cool. How about you, JP?
I'll just say working with this team has really been delightful. At first I was like, oh my goodness, how are we going to be able to get the word out, right? But it seems like there has been so much uplifting about this project. Everyone who's involved has really done a lot of great work, and the media and everyone has picked it up. And now we're at a place where we will probably sell out, if not all the productions, darn near close to all of them. And we just see that from our ticket sales and where things are coming in now. But it's been a really great experience, and I'm so looking forward to seeing it on Court Square Theater stage.
That's really great, which is a great segue into the next question. Did you want to add something there, Joe? Did I miss it?
I just want to say about ticket sales.
Okay.
That when you go on and look, when you start looking for tickets, a lot of the center part of the theater is sold for every performance. This theater, if listeners have not been in it before, it's very trite to say this, but there's not a bad seat in the house.
And I agree.
Don't hesitate to buy the tickets on the sides, because they are great seats as well.
I will testify to that as someone who has been there as an audience member and also on stage as a performer. They're great seats. So get them. Great seats. But I was going to say this, you know, what you guys are sharing is a great segue into the next question for each of you. Have there been some few surprising delights along the way behind the scenes for each of you?
That's a really good question. I mean, I at first knew about this play, but I really honestly had no idea the impact that Dr. Glick had on the community. I deal with programming of the theater so much, and there are so many people that have been involved in the programming, but a lot of them, many of them, would tell me stories about how they were connected, not only through the play, but also through this individual who is extremely community. I mean, when you talk about community, he's like one of the rocks, man. And that's just true. Amazing. I never knew until growing with this project of how amazing this individual is and how he impacted so many people's lives. So, yeah.
Well said, JB. Well, for me, I think I remember the question.
Yes. Few surprising delights that you may have found along the way.
Well, I encouraged several people to audition, and I got to watch their auditions, and I was so amazed at how good they were, and they got parts. Aww. So yeah, I was very happy about that.
Yeah, that is always a delight situation as a director, because you want to find the people that are going to fit for the characters. So. There were multiple wonderful delights for me seeing, that they're perfect for this role, and finding those people and getting to see people working as hard as they are to do what they need to do is always a delight to me. Getting to know people like Joe and Bob and JP now better, much, much better. And it makes the process very nice to live through.
We're having a good time.
We are.
And I would say the
delight has been people.
Yeah.
Again, getting to know these folks that are here today, but we have a major role that a person in a major role who does not have a great deal of experience and is doing an amazing job. And that has to do with something to do with heart and the heart that's in the play and the heart that's in the people that we are lucky enough to be working with is absolutely wonderful to experience and to watch.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Great.
That's really great. That's wonderful. Is there anything you would recommend the Laughers read, see, or watch beforehand?
It's hard to answer that question because there has not been, that I'm aware of, anything quite like this play before. And, you know, we've all done research in different areas, and there is some stuff out there, but you do have to do a certain amount of digging, and you never know what you're going to get, because some of the stuff we found as we've been researching has been less than credible.
I like that. Less than credible. Yeah.
I would encourage people to go to YouTube and listen to the song "Can't Feel at Home Anymore in This World Anymore." And really listen to the words, because I think that's what inspired John to write the play. It is a play about healing. And I think that's what he wanted to do for the community. And that's basically what this song does.
Help them heal.
Yeah, help them heal.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. I mentioned this on the first and second part a little bit too. It's just, my therapist talks about it all the time. You have to tell the story and to be able to process it and heal from it. And yep. And because great grief and great loss, that becomes necessary to be able to get to the point of healing, because it helps you make meaning of it.
Yes.
It helps you make meaning of what wasn't great, you know, and how complex this whole story is, because we truly do have a beautiful park now. A Shenandoah National Park is gorgeous. Skyline Drive is gorgeous. People and families today are enjoying the park and the drive and have stories that are meaningful to them. Hikers go up there all the time. I mean, it's part of the Appalachian Trail, and there's a lot of beauty to unfold through those stories that have impacted families as well. There's a rich connection here that could be made from today and, you know, yesterday, as well as tomorrow. And part of it is just, you know, we all need to know not just part of the story, but the whole story.
I grew up taking my children up to Shenandoah National Park camping every summer. I would take the kids, each one at a time. And it's some of my favorite, and my children, some of our favorite memories from their growing up years. And it was and is incredibly beautiful. And what working on this project has done for me is made me appreciate the park even more.
Mm. Ah, that choked me up, Stan. So good and so true. And a beautiful segue once again to the next question. What do each of you hope laughers will get out of watching the play? And anyone for that matter, watching the play Can't Feel at Home. We'll start with you, Joe, because you started this whole mess.
I thank you. Well, I think there's several things. It's a great story told, written very well. So I that's the first thing I want people to get out of it. I've been a storyteller in my life, and the storytelling aspect of it, I want people to enjoy and get something from that. There is also a political undercurrent in the story, because there was politics involved in removing these people from the mountains. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people can relate the political part of it and learn something from it that relates to what is still happening today and to various people in various ways. And that I hope that they can go home with that message as well.
Mm. Very good. How about you, Stan?
There are a good theater, good literature has universal themes that are true in any time period, in any location. And this play is chock full of that. And I am hoping that as the audience members see the characters work through their situations, that the audience members will recognize themselves, aspects of themselves, and it will stir and inspire them to do what they need to do in their own lives to get things worked out and to be happier and more settled.
For me, when John gave me the play and I opened the cover, it said 1998. So that's how long he's been waiting to have this play done. So that's what I want to get out of it, what he wants, what John wanted.
That's what a gorgeous thing for a wonderful friend to say. I love it. How about you, JP?
You know, this is a world premiere, which is pretty amazing. You know, I think that in having the audience come and be able to see this piece, they're going to self-reflect on things from their own lives that they remember or memories that they, even if just seeing a scene, that might bring a memory back of something that happened in their life. And one of the most amazing things about the story is a sense of community. And I want people, when they leave this theater, to understand that we are a community. And in Harrisonburg, Rockingham County, Court Square Theater, what happens in our theater, everything that happens in the area, we're community, and we need to lean on each other to be able to uplift our community, and especially in times like this. We just got done dealing with COVID, and we're still dealing with COVID. Community is so important. So those are the things that I'd like for people to take from seeing this production.
That's wonderful. I love it. As we wrap up here, can you share with the laughers, JP, how they can get tickets to Can't Feel at Home at Court Square Theater?
Oh, yes. Tickets to the world premiere of Can't Feel at Home. You got to go to www.courtsquaretheater.org. That's theater with a T-E-R. And right on our front page, there's a calendar that pops up. If you go to live theater, you can see there's a site there. There's a page that you just click, and then it's easy to click tickets. Or if you want to just get tickets, at the top of our website, you can just go right to tickets, pick the date that you'd like to select, and then go ahead and purchase your tickets. Tickets are selling fast. For a show that opens up in December, I will be more than happy to tell you all that a majority of our ticket sales are already over half sold for our house count. And so by the time that we hit middle of November, I'm sure that many of those productions, many of those dates will probably be sold out. So you want to go get your tickets now. I don't think it's ever too early to purchase a world premiere ticket for a great production that has to deal with community. So do that. CourtSquareTheater.org.
Wow, Bob, I think you coached him well. I mean, that was one heck of a promotion right there, if I ever heard one. It also gives a glimpse, laughers, of what I deal with working with JP Golan. I love it. Laughers, will be sure to put that information for you in the show notes as well so that you can have it. And JP, Joe, Bobby, and Stan, this has been incredibly impactful, touching, heartwarming, and truly amazing chatting with all of you today on all things Can't Feel at Home. It's been a pleasure to be with all of you to help get this story out about these displaced families. Thank you from the bottom of my heart so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn.
You guys are great. Laughers, well, be sure you need to come check out this play. Okay, so be sure to get those tickets. Can't Feel at Home. It runs December 1st through the 4th at Court Square Theater in Harrisonburg. Buy your tickets today at Court Square Theater. That's theater with an E-R, like JP said, .org. We'll put that web link to buy tickets for you to see the play in the show notes as well. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.